The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet. I'm Clay Link here with RotoWire.com's lead prospect analyst, James Anderson. And James, you're just coming off what you described in your article is really one of the most comprehensive, or probably the most comprehensive, top 400 update in season that you've ever done. We, of course, in the fantasy world, thank you for your tireless work on this end. And obviously, we've all enjoyed diving into it, and that's what we're going to be doing on this show. Anything you want to throw out there ahead of time before we get into this latest update to your top 400?
Well, yeah, just to kind of expand on that, the reason why it took so much time is, like, we knew there were going to be a lot of preconceived notions about how good prospects were coming into the year that were going to get proven wrong more than in a typical year, because it had been so long since we'd seen most of these guys. And so we really didn't know where certain guys were at from a talent standpoint. And it was inevitable that there were going to be more pop-up guys this year, and pop-up guys in kind of a major way this year than in previous years, because of that amount of downtime in between the last minor league season. So, that's kind of what went into that. And obviously, you know, I couldn't have done this really in July. I mean, this was a, you know, like a 3-week process, basically. I couldn't have done it in June or July because of the draft. And that was pretty much my main focus then. So, this might be kind of an annual tradition if they keep the draft at the All-Star break. This could be kind of annually the big in-season update of the year, where you do the draft update, the one right after the draft, but then this one after the rookie leagues have started up and everything could be the one where there's really just a ton of movement and a ton of new additions.
Awesome, man. Well, look forward to diving into this. But before we do that, I just want to say, at the risk of jinxing ourselves, having a pretty good run in the main event. This momentum we've got going here, James, seems pretty real. I mean, second in our league, 24th overall right now. I just want to tip the cap to you. And because, you know, we talk a lot on the phone on Sundays, most Sundays, but a couple, you know, we didn't, and you handled fab yourself and you killed it. Abraham Toro, Brandon Belt, these types. Tip of the cap, man. I don't want to jinx us, but I'm proud of the way we've surged in recent weeks.
Well, you were the guy behind the Dalton Varsho pickup. That was a crazy swing for us. We picked up Varsho like when he was just, you know, hitting like a buck 30 or something like that. And it wasn't sure. We weren't sure how long he was going to be a constant in that lineup, and weren't sure if he was going to get sent back down. So he was available on the cheap, and it was just kind of an upside play. And I mean, that one's paid off in spades.
As you said in a tweet recently, sometimes better to be lucky than good. Always better to be lucky than good. Yeah, just we needed a second catcher. I think, I don't know if we were still holding on to Higgy. Sorry about that.
That was a revolving door of just mediocrity in that second catcher spot. And we got lucky there. Yeah.
Also want to tip my cap to you on Drew Steckenrider. We had a couple wins and then a couple saves. So seems like everything's going well. We need Brad Keller to come through.
Well, that's a scary one. We got our two horses going tonight, though, Giolito and Walker Buehler. So, I think if those guys can hold up, I mean, I'm pretty worried about the Giolito start, to be honest. But, we'll hope for the best with those two.
Yeah, it should be fun to see how this plays out in the main event. I'm excited. And you had that tweet that I alluded to, and you said, like, we didn't even discuss taking Buehler in the second or Otani. And I was thinking about it, and actually we discussed actively passing on Otani. just the 11th round was too good to pass up. Can you imagine that 11th round for Otani in a 15-teamer? That's wild. But let's get into your top 400 update here, James. This went live, what was it? Was it last
Friday? I put it up Monday. Late Monday afternoon.
Okay. So Julio Rodriguez, Bobby Witt, you kind of lump together and say it's a coin flip at the very top. Hard to separate these two in terms of long-term value. Two players who should really be great at the big league level.
Yeah, these are legitimate number one overall type talents. And, it sounds like, I did that podcast last week with Chris Welsh on Thursday when I was filling in for Jeff. And Chris seems to, it sounds like maybe he's got some intel that we might be seeing Bobby Witt here before the end of the month.
Really? And so, I love that.
Yeah. I went to check if you dropped him in Stake League yet, and you're still stashing. So,
oh man, there's nobody else worth picking up. I figured if I'm just picking up like Victor Robles to put in my active lineup, I just need to keep stashing Bobby.
Yeah, but I mean, we've kind of discussed this a little bit, but I mean, you might wonder like why the Royals would start his clock when they're not really contending. I think it's kind of easy if you think ahead to the next spring training. Like, I think the Royals are going to be very open to Witt winning a job out of spring training. I mean, they're kind of they just kind of operate differently than a team like the Mariners do in terms of doing right by their players. And if you're going to be open to having Witt break camp with the team next year, there's nothing to be gained from a service time standpoint by keeping him down for the rest of this year, because you're just going to get him for the next 6 years regardless. So you might as well bring him up if you think he's ready, and it certainly looks like he's ready. So, I'm sure Bobby Witt's, I would assume he's rostered in almost every league at this point. Maybe not in some super shallow redraft leagues that don't have a keeper component, but on the off chance that he's out there, now would be a good time to go grab Bobby Witt.
I saw Keibert Ruiz homered yesterday for, I think, Rochester. So I'm still playing the stash game on Witt and Ruiz. Pretty sad state of affairs in the Stake League, where I have slipped into buyer territory. Trying to dig myself out of that. Don't want to end the streak of eating steaks. Now this next group, you kind of, well, number 3 through 22, you break into two tiers, 2A and 2B. It seems like, all these guys, this is pretty fluid in this range, and there could be a lot of shuffling in this range over the next year or so.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of studs in this range. We still haven't gotten to a pitching prospect yet, 3 through 22. And, I have Brennan Davis at 3, Riley Green at 4. Spencer Torkelson at 5. I mean, those guys they're not quite, number one overall caliber prospects to me. They're kind of your traditional top 10 type of prospects, but you know, like you said, this is a very fluid range, and I do see a bit of a gap. Like, got like Luis Matos, I bumped up to 11 overall. I think he had been in the teens. Anthony Volpe is kind of right around where he was, and then at 12. And then there's a little bit of a drop to me from Volpe to Josh Jung at 13, and Josh Lowe at 14, and Robert Hassel at 15. Jason Dominguez has really been scuffling at low A, but I think he's still a top 20 guy. But the kind of the big riser up into this high end range is Brian Rocchio, who's at 22. I think he'd been in the 60s prior to this update. And I kind of focused that he was the first player I sort of broke down in the article after those top two guys that we were talking about. And with Rocchio, you know, it's a pleasant surprise for me. I used to sort of scoff at the idea that Rocchio was a better fantasy prospect than his org mate, Tyler Freeman. But, you know, with Freeman getting hurt and with Freeman, it's kind of still projection with hoping that the double digit homer power comes. He didn't steal as many bases this year as I would have expected, even though that hit tool is still elite. But meanwhile, Rocchio, who's, I think he's 19 months younger than Freeman, he is getting to that power, and he's getting to it ahead of schedule. You know, I kind of always thought both guys were going to end up in the 15 to 20 homer range. Well, Rocchio, you know, maybe that is selling him a little short, because he's hit 11 home runs in his last 65 games, and he's got to be the youngest player at Double A at this point. He's just 20 years old. Recently got the bump up there, and so Rocchio getting to this power at such a young age, while maintaining the strong hit tool, while continuing to be a threat on the bases. It's really encouraging for projecting him long term. I mean, there's a lot of Francisco Lindor comps out there, and I included a side by side of those two guys hitting home runs that someone tweeted at me, Ben Nelson, and it is kind of eerie, just sort of how similar the swings look, and it's kind of a similar growth that you kind of thought was maybe possible, but you didn't know when it would happen, just because they both have similarly sort of slight frames. And I don't think Rocchio's the next Lindor, at least not yet. Otherwise he'd be quite a bit higher, but you know, I think that's becoming a legitimate possibility, and it's just been a really pleasant surprise to see the power come as quickly as it has for him.
Yeah, Ben Nelson is right that it is pretty scary how similar that swing is when you put them, you know, side by side on the same screen between Rocchio and Lindor. Pretty interesting. And yeah, that's pretty cool. I also wanted to just note, because you said a couple weeks ago, you know, don't read too much into Zach Veen's stolen base totals this year, but you still have him in that 2B tier. So a top 20 prospect for you, even though you did throw out that caveat recently about not putting too much stock into those 30 bags this year.
Yeah, I mean, with Veen, it's all about the bat. I mean, he will steal bases, but I just, you know, I think stolen bases, that's not going to be the main selling point with him, I don't think. Unless, I mean, maybe it's possible. I can't imagine his body maintaining that type of speed over the next like 3 to 4 years. He's such a big guy. But the fact that he's really surged from a power standpoint of late, and we know that he's a big OBP guy. So there's a lot to like there, but I mean, I'm still just, I kind of want to see how he fares at high A and double A, just in terms of what the batting average is going to look like. Obviously Coors Field's nice, but you know, there's no shame in being 20th overall as in your debut season.
Now, when we were talking Brian Rocchio, you mentioned Tyler Freeman, a guy that you were pretty high on for a while. mentioned he's not getting to that same power that Rocchio is. And he's Freeman, as Rocchio moves up, he's the only guy in the top 40 here, as you note, with the red arrow down next to his name. So anything else you want to mention with Freeman that has him slipping beyond just the lack of in-game power?
Well, he just had surgery on his on his shoulder. So that's kind of the thing. I mean, like, if he'd never gotten hurt this year, who knows? You know, maybe he would have tapped into power as the season went on. Maybe he even forces a move up to AAA, but he's not doing anything right now. We don't know exactly how the shoulder surgery is going to maybe affect his ability to tap into that power next year. So just kind of in a holding pattern with him. And when you're out and you're missing time and you didn't make the type of skill gains that I was sort of maybe hoping for this year, you're just inevitably going to get passed by guys who are healthy and are showing those skills.
Now, we have more to talk about here. We'll get to those players momentarily. But first, let's take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now we are back on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet. Clay Link here with lead prospect analyst James Anderson. James, Blaze Jordan, a name we've thrown out there a bit in recent weeks, and you had him 127 to start the minor league season. He's now up to 37. Blaze Jordan is on your latest top 400 update. Sounds like he's making contact at a lot better clip than you expected in his first taste of pro ball.
Yeah, I mean, I was bullish on him. I mean, I still think I was probably higher on him than most people coming into the season. But I just thought it was going to take a year or two before he started to make contact at a really solid clip, or maybe before he was making contact at a solid clip and getting to the power in games at the same time. But like, if you had told me, and I really think if you'd told anyone, that this is how his first 25 games as a pro were going to go, both from a hit tool and a power standpoint, I think it would have been tough to not view him as a top 10 fantasy prospect in that draft class. And obviously his pedigree is goes back maybe even further than any other high schooler from that class. And he was one of the youngest hitters in that draft. And so it would have been understandable for him to kind of get off to a slow start to his pro career. But I mean, I think at this point you just have to view him as one of the best young power hitting prospects in baseball. And, you know, maybe he falls flat over this last month at low A and he ends up falling down the rankings a little bit in the off season. That's possible. But to me, he's made such a strong first impression, and the power is just so undeniable with him that it's hard for me to not get really excited.
Now, a guy who's made a similarly impressive leap up the standings, Nick York, you describe him as a completely different type of prospect than Blaze Jordan. You want to kind of explain what you mean by that?
Well, right. So with Blaze Jordan, it was just like, we know about the power. We don't know about the hit tool. With Nick York, we knew about the hit tool. I mean, you never really know about a prep guy's hit tool, but I mean, he was one of the top hit tool guys in that draft. And it was just kind of a question of how much power was going to come. When was the power going to come? But York has been probably even someone who was just extremely high on York. I don't know if you could have expected him to be this advanced of a hitter this early. I mean, he went straight to low A, and he's already up to high A. So he's probably been better than expected from a hit tool standpoint. And then he's also getting to much more power than I would have expected with that aggressive assignment to low A. So, he's kind of my type of prospect, the second base hit tool guy, the type of guy that you love to hate. But, mm-hmm. He's on a roll right now. The fact that he's already at high A, is he the only high school hitter from that draft to be up to high A already? He might be. It's just been a really impressive start to Nick York's pro career.
Now, on the pitching side, a guy making some waves at the big league level already, Luis Heel. I was told it was pronounced Heel. Obviously, when you see it how it's spelled, do you think at a glance it's just Gil, G-I-L? But apparently it's pronounced Heel. 23 years old and only 3 starts, but zero ERA, yet to give up an earned run. Pretty impressive K numbers, too, 18-7. Not so great at the AAA level this year, but you like generally what you've seen out of this 23-year-old.
Yeah, I think the command is obviously the elephant in the room, and maybe he, that it could still be kind of his undoing, but really the thing that is most important for any pitching prospect, to me, at least the way that I kind of approach that subset of prospects, is being big league ready. Because so much, even when you're like at Double A, even if you're just like Grayson Rodriguez and you're just crushing it at Double A, his arm could break at any moment, and then he has like 2 years behind where he was just coming back from that. Heel is already providing fantasy value right now. He doesn't have a permanent spot in the rotation, but he's got one of the best fastballs in the game. It's just an absolutely monster pitch, and the slider plays well off of it. The changeup is a work in progress, but the fact that he is ready to contribute in the majors and healthy and has this type of upside and is having success at the age of 23. I mean, most pitching prospects are not ready to have big league success at the age of 23. There's a lot going for him, and there's a lot of room for him to get better. So the command could still kind of end up being an issue with him, but I think that it might end up being a buying opportunity in drafts next year, because people are going to look at the command and be like, I don't know, like that looks pretty shaky. Maybe the ERA estimators are going to hold that against him. So if he can stay healthy and maybe improve the command just a little bit, I think he could be a really nice value next year.
Well, I'll tell you this. If XFIP doesn't like him, James, I won't go anywhere near him. I won't touch him with a 10-foot pole. I just want to note here, too, that in that Luis Heel blurb, you noted that if Tanner Houck were still eligible, he'd be a top 50 prospect for you. The Red Sox have been kind of gaming the system to kind of keep basically a 27-man roster and just have that flexibility with Hauk and send him down. That's been kind of annoying, but I've been really impressed with what I've seen from Hauk on the mound. And a lot of people have noted the comparisons to Chris Sale from the right side. And when they're lined up, like that Rocchio Lindor comp, it's kind of scary. How similar Hauk and Sale are, but just different arm, different handed.
Yeah, I guess. I don't want to put that type of comp on Hauk. I mean, the slider might be that good, but
pretty lofty comp.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really torn because we were having dinner last night, and I was devastated that Hauk got pulled before he could go five innings and qualify for the win, because that was basically the only way to salvage what ended up being kind of a lackluster outing for him. But at the same time, I'm not super devastated when he doesn't go out there and totally shove, because I want the price for drafts next year to be in a nice range. He's the type of guy where if he were to finish the year really, really strong, you might have to take him inside the top 150, and that'd be kind of a bummer. But I think the price will be fairly affordable.
Now, what can you tell us, James, about Jairo Pomares? Just turned 21 years old. Sounds like he's a guy who, with the lost year, just kind of transformed into a different player.
Yeah, he got a lot stronger. He got much better at driving the ball with authority. And his 37% hard hit rate is, you know, that'd be elite for any minor leaguer. But for a guy who just turned 21 at low A and high A to have that type of hard hit rate, it really supports a lot of the damage he's done this year. There's some stuff you could nitpick. I hate referencing BABIP, but I mean, his is 450. So, I mean, obviously that's not sustainable no matter how hard you're hitting the ball. And his plate skills, you know, there's some regression. Like if he just kept playing with these current skills, his numbers would continue to trend down. But the fact that he has shown that he's got this power in there, because like my big worry with Pomares coming into the year was like, we know he's got a good hit tool, but he's basically going to have to be a left fielder defensively. And is he going to hit for enough power to profile in left field? Well, I think he's proven so far this year that he will.
Very nice. And in that main event league that we shared together, James, when we were putting in fab bids last week, you wanted to put Aaron Ashby on the list. We didn't end up getting him. We got Brad Keller. Prayers up for Brad Keller. I hope I don't have to continue to apologize to you. Ashby, I don't know if we'd even have started him, but he's a guy who in the bullpen right now probably wouldn't hurt us. Obviously, Brad Keller has the possibility to really hurt us. But Ashby, only four appearances, but man, it's looking like he's another arm that the Brewers have kind of manufactured and turned into a real weapon.
Yeah, you know, I was tempted to put him even higher than number 70 overall. And I feel like I sort of held back because I didn't want any sort of Brewers bias to creep in there. But I mean, you could argue that he's a better prospect than Heel. His breaking ball, his secondary stuff are better than Heels, and his ability to generate ground balls are therefore also better than Heels. He can touch 97 from the left side. The fastball, I'd probably still take Heels. It's a beautiful pitch, but I mean, Ashby's got a great fastball. The tough thing with him is just kind of, When will the Brewers turn him loose as a true starting pitcher and ideally in a five-man rotation? Because it's probably not going to happen. I mean, it definitely won't be in a five-man rotation this year, but he's probably not even going to be turned loose as a true starting pitcher this year. He might, but they've got enough healthy depth right now where they don't need to use him in that manner. And I think they want to use him as a weapon out of the bullpen in the postseason. So it probably won't happen this year. Like if you're using him in redraft leagues this year, you're using him for the strikeouts and maybe he vultures a win or gets like a multi-inning save or something like that. But the big thing to me is just what will we be able to use him next year? And if he starts to look like he's competing for a rotation spot in spring training and might win one, I mean, really the sky's the limit. Like, you know, we've seen what they've been able to do with the big three in their rotation right now. Ashby would be the only southpaw of that group. And honestly, his stuff is as good or better than the other three guys when they were first options for the big league rotation. It's not always smooth sailing. I mean, we saw what happened. Corbin Burns' first attempt as a big league starter didn't go well, even though his stuff was really good. You know, Brandon Woodruff was kind of a surprise. It took a while for Freddie Peralta to be given that role. So you never know how long it's going to take with Ashby, but his ceiling is really high and he's big league ready.
Yeah, you love a lefty pumping 96, 97. He's got a slider and a change. It's small sample so far, 35.4% CSW. And yeah, I mean, only 8.2 innings in his four appearances. So you're not expecting much length right now, but definitely an arm to keep track of. And I was asking you guys the other night, it seems like the Brewers all of a sudden are like the pitching wizards. Like they're the kings of developing pitching all of a sudden. I was wondering if that secretive pitching lab, if you think that's really like has led to this like renaissance pitching wise for the Brewers.
I mean, yeah, they do a lot of stuff that's kind of on the cutting edge. They use these like high tech balls that kind of teach guys how to spin the ball. And they've just got a lot of stuff that they're dabbling in, but I mean, they're not the only team. I mean, like the Dodgers and Giants know how to do all that stuff. I believe the Yankees are pretty cutting edge on the pitching side as well. So they're not doing like a bunch of stuff that no other team is doing, but maybe they are just doing it a little bit better. And I mean, track record's really important when it comes to just teams being able to develop starting pitching. It's really, really hard to do, obviously. And some teams are going to be better at it than others.
Yeah, man. You were telling me yesterday about that the Giants machine for their hitters where they can kind of program in that night's opposing starters velo and spin and pitch types and whatnot, and they could kind of just get reps basically against that night's pitcher on the machine. It's kind of amazing the changes in development and technology that we're seeing implemented across the game. It's pretty amazing. And that seems to be like a real separator for different organizations, because the Giants, nobody expected the Giants to be this good right away. So it seems like not only the work they're doing in the front office, but also tech wise and in player development seems to be unlocking something for the Giants and for the Brewers as well. Now you're saying you're taking a big fat L on Dre Jameson. Why is that, James?
Well, this might be a record for a guy entering the top 400 after being unranked. He debuted at number 71. He went from unranked to number 71. So that's, you know, no matter how you want to slice it, even if you want to say that he's on this crazy run recently since my last big update, obviously I was too low on him entering the year for him to go from unranked to inside the top 75. You know, I knew that his stuff was really loud. Like, you know, his breaking balls have been kind of a big deal for a while. But the fact that he was listed at 6 foot, 165 pounds, and had pretty sketchy command, albeit in a very small sample coming into the year, I thought he was going to be a multi-inning reliever. Maybe you could even say that I should have had him ranked even knowing that he was going to be a multi-inning reliever just based on the stuff. But he's really kind of put those command concerns behind him this year. That's like the biggest thing is it's like now I don't think you can make a case that he's not a starter as long as his health cooperates. 6.4 walk percentage this year. So that's really good, especially for a guy with his stuff. He struck out double-digit batters in four of his last six starts, and he's going like seven innings in a lot of these starts. So that's really impressive. But I got to give a shout out to Jeff Ponce over at Prospects Live. He was the one that really kind of turned me on to just how crazy Jameson's stuff has been this year, particularly the slider and the curveball. And I'd strongly recommend going to Prospects Live and subscribing to their Patreon, because they're, you know, Jeff's got some sources and some ways to access data that I don't have. And I'm really jealous of some of those connections that he's got. But like, it's really eye popping when you see the data on Jameson's stuff. And what I really love is that he's got five pitches and they all average over 80 miles an hour. And that's just going to give hitters at the big league level even fits, because you don't know what's coming. You don't have that much time to make the right swing decision. And, you know, I think that it's really exciting to see him break out this way this year. And I was dead wrong on him before the year.
Well, I like that you can admit that, and we're all wrong about myriad things in life, and I appreciate people who can own up and admit when they were wrong, James. I'm wrong a lot, so I have plenty of experience in that. Before we move on, I have to pause, and hopefully you can bear with me, and we can make it through these reads and then get back to more of James's prospect content. There's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire. It's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WynnBET, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WynnBET is now the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. WynnBET brings you all the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. Want a break from sports betting? Head into WynnBET's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down in blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at baccarat. WynnBET is currently available in six states: Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WynnBET, the possibilities are limitless. WynnBET is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WynnBET now. That's WynnBET. WynnBET, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcasts. Also, NFL is back on Thrive Fantasy. Thrive Fantasy has over $100,000 guaranteed for NFL Week 1. With Thrive Fantasy, you can eliminate the countless hours of research and focus on only the top-tier athletes that have the biggest impact on the game. Sign up today and get a free six-month RotoWire subscription. Here's how you can claim your free RotoWire subscription. Visit rotowire.com/thrive. Deposit a minimum of $10 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $100. And finally, play in your first paid contest and receive a free six-month RotoWire subscription. Finally, the new NFL season is fast approaching, and Yahoo is excited to kick off daily fantasy football. Yahoo is also excited to announce that its platform will now be shark-free, Jam. To celebrate the opening of Yahoo Daily Fantasy Football and being shark-free, Yahoo is giving its users the opportunity to claim free $10 in contest entry credit. Users can take advantage of this free $10 contest entry credit offer to join Yahoo's Week 1 $1 million Baller Contest. The $1 million Baller Contest features $200,000 in guaranteed prizing overlay. 25% of the players entered will be paid out, including first place receiving $100,000 and an entry to the first ever Yahoo Fantasy Football Championship live finals event, which will occur at MGM National Harbor in Maryland this December. Play daily fantasy football on Yahoo this season. Visit sports.yahoo.com/dailyfantasy/welcome to claim the free $10 offer. So back to your article here, James. Dustin Harris was a guy you were making it pretty clear needed to be rostered in dynasty leagues. And It seems like there's no slowing him down right now. The line drive rate, especially high, and really the entire batted ball profile screams, you know, potential big league regular.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dustin Harris checks all the boxes. If you want to scout the stats, obviously he is incredibly impressive in every facet of hitting. You know, he's a little old for high A is maybe the one thing you could say, but I mean, to be striking out less than 16% of the time and to be doing as much damage as he's doing, like it's, you know, I would project him to have success as he climbs the ladder. And if you just watch him, it's hard not to get really excited. Just incredibly quick hands, incredible control of the barrel. And, you know, with Harris, like Harris and Dre Jameson both went from off the rankings completely to inside the top 75. Jameson, I think, is obviously a big L. Harris, I mean, nobody was on Harris. And, you know, he was a really nice scouting find by the Rangers. And, like, if he keeps going, like, he's not going to keep going at this rate. But if he just finishes the season well, he probably enters next year as a top 50 guy. And it's just, like, I just don't know where to draw the line on how excited to get about him. I mean, like part of me wants to just really, really push him because I don't really see any weaknesses. And I want to make it clear that he's got 24 steals, but that's not why he's ranked this high. I mean, I would have him in the top 100 if he had zero steals. Like, I just love the bat. I haven't seen any updated times on his run grade. So, like, entering the year, I think he was thought of as kind of like an average runner, maybe a tick below. So maybe that's legit. I think he's only been caught stealing one time this year. So maybe he actually does have, like, plus speed. But I'm not really factoring in the steals that much with this ranking. It's just more about the bat.
And then Taj Bradley, you suggest kind of the best of the rest in that Tampa farm system among pitchers behind Shane Baz. And interesting that you note he's gone exactly 5 innings, 13 straight starts. You love to see that for guys not even 21 yet, already providing that length.
Yeah, it's really awesome to have that level of consistency, to not have a single start in that 13 start run where you just, like, didn't have good enough stuff to get through 5 innings. I mean, that's really incredible to me. Big fastball, big slider, working on the changeup. But yeah, Bradley is really exciting. Ian Seymour is also really exciting in the Rays system. I mean, they just keep pumping them out. I think it's debatable at this point whether the Rays still have the best farm system in baseball. I think Cleveland is right there. The Pirates are right there. And maybe if you factor in depth, it's still the Rays. But if we were to just say, like, only guys on the top 400 who has the best farm system, it might be Cleveland at this point. But the Rays still just have an embarrassment of riches.
And Landon Knack, new Dodgers top pitching prospect. Is that correct? Slotting in just outside the top 100 on the overall top 400.
Yeah, I think it used to be Bobby Miller, but Miller is sidelined with an unspecified injury. That's kind of scary. Ryan Pepiot is just having big-time command issues, and I'm starting to wonder if maybe he's a multi-inning reliever or just a straight-up reliever. Either way, I think Knack, if you're just, like, looking at, like, which Dodgers pitching prospect should I consider in my draft and holds for next year, I think it's Knack because he's already 24. He was 23 in the draft, in the 2020 draft. Like, he was, like, the oldest pitcher in that draft. So it's not like he's just been spending a bunch of time in the lower levels and he's finally breaking out this year. He's he was drafted when he's 23. He had arguably the best command and control in that class, and he's got the stuff really to go with it. So, I mean, I could see a case for having Knack 20, 30, 40 spots higher, honestly. I just don't really know what his weaknesses are. Maybe the biggest weakness is just that he's in the Dodgers system and it's not clear when he would get a shot to be a legitimate starter every fifth day for them.
Now, last year, you and I both criticized the O's for passing on Austin Martin, and I expressed some shade at, I think it was the Tigers who, you know, passed on, I forget who they passed on, but I just felt they were too zeroed in on their first round pick. This year, maybe looking to spread some of their budget around. And with Austin Martin, you know, they passed on him partially in order to give Kobe Mayo an overslot deal. Do you think you're maybe going to have to eat your words of criticism on the O's passing on Martin, given Mayo's resurgence here?
You were probably criticizing the Royals, not the Tigers, because the Tigers took Torkelson. So
I was talking this year's draft, though.
Oh, this year's
draft. The guy with the starts with a J, I forget his name.
Oh, yeah, the Jackson Job. Yeah,
Jackson.
I might not have to eat my words. Unfortunately, like Heston Kjerstad, it's been a medical issue with him. But like my argument was basically, I'll take Austin Martin over Heston Kjerstad plus Kobe Mayo. And Martin is like 100 spots higher than Mayo, but the shade at Mayo is looking like it was misdirected. He's 6'5", and I think he might be in better shape now than he was as a high school senior. He's really lean for a guy who's 6'5". And I thought he was going to add bad weight this year that was going to kind of compromise the hit tool. And, you know, not only has he stayed in shape and done a really good job with his body, but he's making a ton of contact for a big teenage slugger. And I think the power is only going to continue to grow with Mayo. And he's just had kind of a flawless debut season. So he's just continuing to rise. He might finish the year as a top 100 guy. And, you know, the Orioles system, it might not be quite where they'd hoped it would be when they did select Mayo, but Mayo has really worked out so far.
And Eddie Leonard sounds like he's pretty much ready for AA next year at age 21. So looks like he's ready for that next challenge.
Yeah, I'll talk about Eddie Leonard and Jorbit Vivas together since they're both Dodgers infielders who opened the year at low A. They were both kind of off the radar. Vivas was more known, I think, than Leonard. It was such a deep system that, you know, you weren't going to buy into every single infielder in the system, and they were kind of behind some guys. But the performance for both has been really, really impressive. Leonard is doing a ton of damage in the power department. He's already got 18 home runs this year as a 20-year-old between low A and high A while hitting over 300, over 400 OBP. Vivas might have one of the best hit tools in the lower levels. 11% strikeout rate with 13 home runs this year. He only had 2 home runs in 105 games prior to the season. So usually with a guy like Vivas, we're like, well, if the power comes, then he could be an everyday guy. But the power already seems to be here with him. So both those guys, both of them were available in a lot of my dynasty leagues prior to this update. So Eddie Leonard and Jorbit Vivas with the Dodgers, obviously it's a stacked system. So you might be hoping they get traded away. But I mean, they're both just having massive seasons.
And now is the time to keep churning and churn in your dynasty league. And definitely check out this article, rotowire.com/try for a free 10-day trial to see the top 400 update. And also James's piece that goes along with it, his article. I mean, this is the, these are the kind of guys you can get now who could, their stock could explode in the years to come. And Henry Mendez may be on that list. You're going to have to wait a while. He's only 17 years old, but he's been a standout at the rookie level.
Yeah, he basically never swung and missed at pitches in the zone when he was in the DSL, and that got him a promotion to Arizona. He's an outfielder in the Brewer system. The contact skill is really appealing. He's struck out more since getting to the complex league, but that's not that surprising given his age. You know, most of the guys who have been standouts in the ACL have been 18 and 19 year olds, and he's just 17. So I wouldn't hold that strikeout rate against him. But the really appealing thing to me with Mendez is his frame is just so projectable. 6'2", 175. It's very easy to picture him adding like 15 to 20 pounds of good weight. And if these plate skills that he showed in the DSL are at all indicative of what he's going to be in future years, and he does add that power, then, I mean, look out. Like, he could just be an offensive monster. So really exciting for Mendez. He was not on my radar at all coming into the year. So it's just been, it's been fun to see these guys kind of come out of the woodwork and really have big years.
You were kind enough to include some clips from Lucas on Twitter of Randy Vasquez's breaking ball. This thing is absurd. 3,100 RPMs. I mean, that's just silly. How's the rest of the arsenal look for Randy Vasquez?
I don't have much on the changeup. It's, I mean, the breaking ball is just ridiculous. Like you said, he's got a mid 90s fastball, throws a two seamer and a four seamer. The thing with Vasquez is his command really improved from low A to high A. And, you know, maybe that's the robo umps maybe play a role in that down at low A. But if the command that he showed at high A is at all indicative of what's to come, Vasquez's stuff is just really lights out. So he could be really special. You know, maybe even if it doesn't come along, he could just be an absolute absolutely dominant closer. But, you know, he's far enough from the majors where you're, I wouldn't say you should go all in. I mean, he could still get hurt, could still get set back in that way. But just from a stuff standpoint, he really stands out.
And Zach Kent's got not one but two good breaking balls. Fastball sounds like just kind of okay. But you think those breaking balls can carry him?
Yeah, I mean, it's a low to mid-90s fastball. But I included a video of him too. I mean, his curveball is absolutely devastating. The slider's got really good metrics as well. And I just included him because everyone else we've talked about so far, I would guess, is rostered in all the really deep dynasty leagues out there. Zach Kent might still be available. I think he's rostered in just 1% of Fantrax leagues. Fantrax is definitely the best place to play Dynasty, by the way.
Zach, but, just with a K, by the way, Z-A-K.
Yeah, yep, that's good to point out. But, I mean, he's already up to double A, and he's got 45 strikeouts over his last 30 innings, 1-2 ERA, a 8-3 whip over that span. So, like, he's breaking out right in front of our eyes over the last, like, month or so. And I think if he can start throwing more of his breaking balls and less of his fastball and really kind of optimize that pitch mix, he could be a total stud, and really not many people are talking about him.
Now, finally, the last question I wanted to ask you about your article here was, you kind of had a little subsection entitled "The Catcher Conundrum." You haven't really talked about many catchers here. So you kind of want to explain this conundrum that you wrote about.
Yeah, so I think I've mentioned this a few times, but like, we're definitely having a catcher renaissance this year in the minors. Like, usually, like, I might have like one catcher in my top 50 and another catcher in like the 50 to 100 range, and then maybe like three or four catchers in the 100 to 200 range. This year I've got 9 catchers in my top 110 and 8 catchers in my top 80. And it doesn't feel right. Like it feels like I want to bump all these guys down. Because I've been so ingrained of just like catchers are just as risky as they come. I mean, they're gonna, you know, get hurt or they're gonna get to the majors and the bat's just not gonna be what you thought it was because they're gonna be learning how to defend. But all these guys are just so talented that it's hard to justify bumping them any further down. But at the same time, if you have this many good catching prospects, then maybe that means that the position is less scarce. And like you could probably go out in your dynasty league right now if it's a league where like only 300 catching or 300 prospects are rostered. Like you could probably scoop up Jefferson Caro with the Brewers or Brian Lavastida with Cleveland. And so if you can just readily add guys like that, guys of that caliber, should you really be paying up for these other guys who are consensus top 100 guys? And I think it's fascinating to me. I don't know really what to do. Like part of me just wanted to have MJ Melendez outside of my top 100, but at the same time, I mean, he's improved so much with his hit tool, and he's leading the minors in home runs last I checked, and he's at AAA. Like, what more does he have to do to get inside the top 100? So I ended up putting him at 79. But I don't feel all that comfortable with where any of these guys are ranked, really, with the exception maybe of Adley Rutschman at 6. These guys might all be just a bit too high. But, if I had Francisco Alvarez or Gabriel Moreno or Keiber Ruiz or MJ Melendez, I would be shopping them if I could trade them for a player at another position who's right next to them in my rankings. I think I would, just because with this much of an influx of good catching prospects, I just don't think they're quite as valuable as they would be if there was only like 3 or 4 of them that were performing this well.
Oh, that's really interesting because, yeah, obviously catcher has been extremely shallow position in fantasy baseball really for the entire time I've been playing fantasy baseball in my life, but maybe it won't be so shallow in a few years. Rutschman, Alvarez, yeah, Henry Davis, Gabriel Moreno, Ruiz, Wells, Melendez, Soderstrom. Pretty wild. You'd have to imagine like what a third of those guys move off or more. Maybe a third of them don't even hit, but even so, that's a pretty good crop of prospects behind the plate coming in the years ahead. Anything else you want to mention with the article, James?
No, the ETAs and Team Top 20s are all updated too. So a lot of prospect stuff to check out on the site right now. Not exactly sure what we're going to talk about next week, but it just feels really good to kind of be done with this big project.
Yeah, congratulations. I'm sure we'll figure something out to talk about, and look forward to that. This is really the best stuff in the business, guys, for prospects, so go sink your teeth into it. rotowire.com/try for a 10-day trial. The best fantasy prospect coverage in the business from one James Anderson. James, what's your walk-up song for the week? You got one?
Yeah, you're very familiar with this song. Buck 50.
Oh, yeah, I love that song.
Off Buck Supreme 50 Clientele. Off of Supreme Clientele. Got a Redman cameo on there.
I've been wearing my Supreme Clientele face mask quite a bit.
Just love a that. Total banger.
Just the best.
That
one's got Method in it too, and who else is in that song? Redman.
Redman, Method Man, Ghostface. Is that it?
Let's see here. Capadonna, I think.
Oh, yeah. Don, of course.
I really come around on Don. I will no longer slander
Don. Yeah, we were talking about like owning up to your mistakes and stuff like that. I got to own up to all my Capadonna slander from earlier years.
I was there too in my youth.
I had no idea what I was talking about. Sometimes you just got to own up to that,
though. I didn't get it at the time in my youth, but now I see him for what he is, and he's I actually really like Don. And he was really influential with the Wu clan before they really hit it big. So I'm kind of glad they brought him into the loop. Maybe I'll have to give some Don solo stuff a try for the first time. That'd be a big step forward in my life. My song is going to be another rock song, actually, but Cult of Personality by Living Color. You know this song? Great song. And also the theme song, the entrance music of one CM Punk. I'm not a huge wrestling guy anymore, but if you did not see CM Punk's debut in All Elite Wrestling, I recommend checking it out. I've never seen a crowd pop so huge, James. I mean, that was one of the biggest crowd reactions I've ever seen. And like grown men in tears in the audience. CM Punk was in tears. I was actually thinking about driving down to Milwaukee today to see All Elite Wrestling. Dynamite, but then I thought better of it. Sitting in amongst a bunch of people right now in Wisconsin, where COVID's kind of running rampant, it didn't seem like the best route. That'd be a hell of a way to go, James. Seeing a wrestling event, but that's it for me, man. Cult of Personality, definitely check out that song if you've never heard it. Great tune.
Nice.
Well, appreciate it, James. Anything else on your mind?
No, Dre Jameson just hit me up on Twitter and wants to see a copy of the article. So I got to figure out a way to break him off a PDF or something like that.
Very nice. Well, we look forward to more prospect talk next week. Hope you'll join us on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast, sponsored by WinBet.